Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about calendaring, school calendars, church calendars, the ability to find agreeable meeting schedules, sign-up apps, and all kinds of things related to getting people together at the same time in the same spot. Sally and I will be giving our picks of the week, although somewhat qualified picks of the week, and much more on episode 202 of the Wells Tech Podcast. Sign me up. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. Martin Spriggs here along with Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you on episode 202.
Yes, and I'm very happy to be back in the confines of the Wells Tech podcasting studio after our trials and tribulations of last week of being on the road. That was just a pain.
Hey, you need a challenge every once in a while. Yeah, How was your road trip? What were you doing over there in Michigan?
It was nice. I was doing one of my productivity seminars for pastors in the the Southwestern Conference of the Michigan District, which was actually held in Indiana. So it was mostly it was pastors from Michigan, but there's a couple stragglers in the Indiana northern Indiana that are kind of part of that Michigan district. So we were in LaPorte, Indiana, which is a beautiful place. Although I'd say they're kind of Wi-Fi challenged there.
Did you meet any Wells Techers along the way?
Clint Rogus was there. He introduced himself. It was nice to spend some time with the brothers there and to meet Clint. It seems like everywhere we go at this point, there's somebody that's a listener, and that's really neat.
That's a good thing. And if they aren't listening yet, you guys that are listening now can share the Wells Tech podcast with them.
Wells Tech evangelist. Yes.
There you go. So what's our topic for today, Martin?
We are going to talk about calendaring, and a topic near and dear to every church and school office administrator's heart. This is an age where there are a lot of choices. I think maybe even just a couple years ago, there were very few choices in this online calendaring space. And people were struggling, and I guess they still are struggling with trying to map online calendars to the traditional paper calendars, because some of our members and school parents are still desirous of the paper calendar, whether they can get them online or not. And yeah, the same goes with newsletters and those kinds of things. But it's I think we're slowly moving toward a time when online calendars are going to be the norm, and good news is we've come up with a nice list of things that will help online calendar. In fact, this whole topic came from a request from Brent Nemers down in Atonement in Plano, Texas, wondering not necessarily about calendars, the church calendar in particular, but how to schedule appointments, and that's an ongoing challenge, trying to find times when people can meet up.
Sure. Before we delve into different resources related to that topic, though, we probably should backtrack and just talk about online calendars in general. And if you've been a listener to Wells Tech very long, you'll know what's coming up next on the show, and that is that we're really big Google Calendar fans. Mm-hmm. And Google Calendar is a really easy and affordable, it's free, solution for churches and schools to use. And what you get in the process is a shareable calendar, can be updated or edited by many different people depending on the permissions you assign to it, can easily be embedded on your church or school website, which is a big plus, so that you edit in one place and immediately in real time the calendar is updated and viewable on your website. So that people can get up-to-the-minute information, especially if you communicate it to them that the paper calendar is going to be out of date as soon as you get it almost, because things do change pretty rapidly. Right. And so Google Calendar is a really good solution. And rather than rehash all we've talked about in the past on the podcast, we want to point people to a couple of previous podcast where we talked about Google Calendar. One in particular is from our bonus Wells Tech Goodness series, which we did a couple of summers ago. Yeah, and we had a whole show dedicated to Google Calendar. So if you're brand new to Google Calendar and all the possibilities there, you want to check that out. On that show, we link to a Wells Tech Wiki page where we just hold your hand and walk you step by step through the whole Google Calendar setup process, how to share it with staff members there, and how to make use of it on your website. So that's a really great starting point for you if you're new to Google Calendar. Another podcast that we did just recently, Martin talked about printing the Google Calendar with a particular utility that we've created here in Sleepy Eye. So if you want to turn your online calendar into a nicely formatted print calendar, this may be one that you want to listen to as well. That's episode 198, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm. And before we dive into some of these other resources, maybe a quick conversation about the uses of calendar. We talked about, obviously, the church and school calendar, just keeping everybody up to date. And there are other reasons to want to use online calendaring. We mentioned one that Brent brought up, which was trying to find a meeting time, and we've got some resources there. But also in this calendaring space, it's the sign-up concept, where you have some available slots that you need sign-ups for. Let's say it's reading to the first graders. You need people to sign up for, you know, the 9 o'clock slot and maybe the 10 o'clock slot on Friday and those kinds of things. I can think of other areas where people may want to sign up for different things, maybe with an appointment with the pastor or scheduling family meetings we have at Peace, my home congregation. Just the ability to say, I'm gonna block this out on my calendar, and I know it's available on your calendar as well. And then some of the tools that we're looking at, we were just doing a little testing before the show, Sally, are really slick, where they automatically add it, if you're using Google Calendar, speaking of Google Calendar, right to the calendar. You really don't have to do much manually at this point.
Right. And those of you that are Google Calendar users may be aware that Google has a feature. It's called appointment slots. It kind of works the way Martin was just describing.
Right.
But as Brent pointed out in his email to us, it's kind of disappointing because the person that's trying to schedule an appointment with you needs to have Google Calendar as well. So it's not just that they can interact with your calendar whether they have a Google Calendar account or not. And so that can be limiting because not everyone uses Google Calendar, obviously. And so you don't want to just have a resource that's only available to the few or the several who do use Google Calendar. So that's why we delved in and looked at a few other options for that kind of scheduling. But the nice thing is, like you said, Martin, is it will on the back end implement it on your Google Calendar. So these tools have a hook into your Google Calendar, and once people schedule times with you, it'll show up on your calendar.
Sure. So one that you were kind of impressed with, Sally, was something called Schedule Once. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Sure. I headed over to the ScheduleOnce.com website and signed up for a free account. They do have pricing available for more features and things like that. So you can get a free account or you can pay for a more professional account. But with the free account, I was able to indicate what my available times were. And on the calendar that people see, they can see the blocks of time that are available and schedule a meeting. And they can decide whether they want 15 minutes of your time or an hour of your time. You kind of control what kind of meeting window they can set up with you. And once they do, then it does have a hook into your Google Calendar and it'll send you the information. And if you approve one of the meeting times they suggested, it'll add it to your Google Calendar, send them an invitation back so they can decide if they are sure about that meeting time and are okay with going forward with the meeting at the particular time you chose.
Right. Very user-friendly. So I tried setting up a meeting with you, and I could pick how long I wanted to meet, and based on that criteria, I would have the available options, and I picked three of them, and then you got a notification, and then you agreed to one of the three that I selected that met my schedule, and then I got a confirmation back that you'd selected one with a link to put it right on my Google Calendar. And then I assume it went right on your calendar as well.
It did. And so pretty easy to work with. If you want to try it out, you can schedule time with me, and we'll have a link in the show notes to my Schedule Once calendar. It's at meetme.so/WellsTechTrainer.
Nice.
So you can check it out.
Yep. Something similar to that, also working with Google Calendar, is something called youcanbook.me. And I ran across this maybe a year or so ago, as I was doing a session for the Wisconsin State Teachers Conference here in Milwaukee, as we were looking for ways to kind of streamline volunteerism, both in the school and the church. And You Can Book Me is a similar concept where you create an account, and there's a free account as well as paid accounts, just like ScheduleOnce.com. And you simply say, I want to make these slots available, so that when they go to the site, when you send them the link or put the link on your website, they see all the slots available. And this could work in a lot of different fashions. So it could be, like I mentioned, the reading to the first graders or whatever, or ushering, for instance. And you can go in and say, I want the 9 o'clock service on October 12th. And they just click that box, and they see that nobody else has picked it. And it immediately puts it on, let's say, the main usher calendar. So the 9 o'clock service on October 12th is now covered. And I think you can also set up how many people can sign up for it. I have to double check that, but at the very least one. And then it's on the calendar, it's on your calendar, it goes both ways. And a great way to offer some sign-ups for different events or different activities.
Yeah, I'm thinking about parent-teacher conference scheduling. That's always kind of a nightmare to
awesome. Good
to
idea.
Organize all that. So
that's a great use case.
Sure, and we have a couple of others that we wanted to talk about as well, but they have a different flavor to them, kind of more like sign-up sheets or specific volunteer spots, and people can volunteer to bring things as well, not just volunteer their time, but volunteer their talents.
Right.
And so, two we want to point out there. One's called Sign App Now,
right.
And the other one is from volunteerspot.com. Mm-hmm. And Martin, you had another example to share with the Sign App
Now.
Yeah,
Sign App Now was another one that I tossed out there for the teachers at the teachers conference last year. And it's really simple. It doesn't even really need an account. It just needs your email address. You put together the form, and I put together a sample one for, let's say, drivers for an art history field trip. So if you're looking for volunteers, you just simply set up the page, what you're looking for, the date or whatever, and you direct people to this link. They put in their email address, and it sends you an email that somebody has signed up for it, so you can track how many people have ultimately signed up for that particular volunteer activity.
It's pretty straightforward, and the volunteer spot is kind of similar. It'll send out an email to a group of people. It's really designed kind of with schools in mind, so if you're looking for a teacher for a particular topic, like some special event you're having in the school and you're looking for some special qualifications or abilities that you want to share with the students, then you send out the email, and it allows them to correspond with the website via email, or they can go on the site and sign up for those times, and not just times, but talents as well. Mm-hmm. I can bring food for the potluck afterwards, or whatever it may be. So lots of options there. I think something we need to make more use of in our congregation. We are still kind of emailing back and forth a whole lot, and this really cuts a lot of that out. It allows you to manage it all online real easily.
Sure. We would probably be remiss, Sally, if we didn't mention the lectionary calendar that we have up on Google Calendar.
Yeah. There is a page on our Wells Tech Wiki dedicated to this. So another feature of having Google Calendar is that you can suck this lectionary calendar right into your own personal calendar. And it has all the information, courtesy of those in the worship office, about the lectionary readings for each of the Sundays and special festival services that are part of our church year. So you get things like all the lessons, the psalm of the day, the prayer of the day, the verse of the day, and all of that can be part of your Google Calendar. So if you aren't making use of that, it's a wonderful resource. We actually are on top of things. We have the new church year that's coming up starting in November, mm-hmm. and we have the church year after that already implemented into the Google Calendar, so you can get 2 years into the future of lectionary resources on your Google Calendar.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about Google Calendar, you can create as many calendars as you want. So you could have a worship calendar or a planning calendar, where you could plop these items and then filter them out as you need them or as you're sitting down to do your work in a particular area. So, good stuff.
Right, just turn on and off the views of whatever calendar you want to see mm-hmm. at the time.
Yep.
So lots of power there with the Google Calendar. We'd love to hear from our listeners if you are doing special things with your Google Calendar that's making life easier for you. Please share with the class so we can pass it along on the Wells Tech podcast.
Absolutely. Let's move on to news in tech, Sally.
Well, there has been some buzz in the tech world this mm-hmm. week around Netflix.
That's right.
And I found this pretty interesting. I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with Netflix. They offer DVDs by mail as well as streaming services. And they had a really good price going for all of that. You could get one DVD at a time plus online streaming for about $10 a month, I think it was.
Right.
And starting at the beginning of September, they changed their pricing structure and incurred the ire of many of their subscribers as they split the pricing. So if you want the DVD by mail, you pay one price. If you want the streaming, you pay another. And in the course of splitting it up, the pricing skyrocketed like 160% or something mm-hmm. like that. So they lost a lot of customers in the deal, apparently.
A couple million.
I heard
yep.
their stock is way down. So
I got a personal email from the CEO. I don't know if you did, Sally. Are you a Netflix customer?
I am.
Yep. Did you get the email?
I did
yep.
yesterday.
Very heartfelt, but letting us know that they are actually making some changes there. I'm not sure that they're substantive changes, but it's definitely a name change. So anybody using the DVD service will no longer be getting Netflix, but something called Quickster.
Yeah, I don't think people were real impressed with that name choice, but Quickster apparently will have the same red envelope, and they'll be coming to you the same way, but they've basically split the two services, mm-hmm. which is what was behind their split of their pricing. Now, you know, in hindsight, it makes more sense,
right.
but they're not changing that pricing uptick as many people had hoped they would back off on or whatever. What I think is interesting about this story, Martin, is just the whole streaming area, you know, that whole space where
yeah.
all of these different people are competing. And, you know, I said to my husband the other day, I can get an ABC.com app and watch shows from the ABC television network. I can get an NBC app on my iPad and watch shows from there. And these shows are free. They do have some commercials in, mm-hmm. intermixed in the shows. CBS.com, actually, if you just surf to it in your Safari browser on the iPad, their videos are now compatible with iPad. And you can play those right from their website.
Yep.
So I don't really need television anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch, you know, the major things. And obviously, I just mentioned the major networks or the major networks of days gone by, at least. And there are many other apps. There's one for the Food Network and TLC and on and on and
sure.
on. So,
mm-hmm.
so you can see that streaming space is becoming the television of tomorrow. You know, I mean, it's very rapidly progressing. And in the course of that, the dollars are, I guess they're upping the price for all the streaming content. The networks
right.
and things are going to be charging a lot more, and Netflix is scrambling to get in the right place in that space and be able to continue their product. I thought it was interesting in that email you mentioned from the CEO. He talked about, you know, people that haven't done well in transitions like this. And he mentioned AOL and how they were, you know, so dominant back in the modem days when the internet first began and really took off, and how, you know, they aren't dominant, obviously, anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's just an interesting place to be. And they're trying to preserve their business and, you know, position it for the future.
It'll be interesting to see what shakes out as a result of this. I use just the streaming side, and I had reached a point where I wasn't maybe watching but one movie a month on the on the physical DVDs. And while you can get more current movies, I kind of find it fun to just find older movies that are on the Netflix streaming site, and plenty of entertainment there. And, you know, a lot of it's a lot cleaner than what you can get in some of the more recent stuff. So, you know, view the old Westerns or crime dramas or whatever. So I really enjoy the service. So
we've been enjoying the DVD side, actually, with older stuff like that. My family just watched Forbidden Planet. Have you ever watched that?
I don't think so.
Really old sci-fi that they enjoyed. Mm-hmm. So, and they've been watching Lost in Space episodes as well. So.
Oh, yes.
Lots of fun old stuff out there.
Yeah, I like it. Let's move on to picks of the week, Sally.
Sure. My pick of the week this week is actually kind of a rerun. I don't know if I've ever had it as a pick, but we've definitely talked about it a lot on the podcast, and that is a streaming service, keeping with the streaming theme, of Ustream.tv. And that is the live streaming service we use here at St. John's. And I'd say it's a pick of the week, but there's also some drawbacks to it. You know, it's a qualified pick of the week.
Mine is too, so we're
in the same boat.
Page, yes.
Okay. We use the free service, but that means that it is ad supported, and we can't control the advertisements that they overlay at times on our free web stream. But we are very happy with, you know, the uptime, the usability of the website. You can easily add your live streaming to your own website so that they don't have to be on the Ustream web page to watch your services or whatever it is that you're streaming. They do have a Facebook app now, and I'll make sure and include a link in the show notes to that. So you can actually have a tab on your Facebook page that has your live video stream available right there embedded in Facebook. And recently I blogged about the ability to broadcast from my iPad. So now they have mobile applications, so you can actually do live video over wireless or cell phone connections from wherever you are. And that was a huge breakthrough for us here, so we can broadcast things like our Bible class, which is down in our church basement where we don't have a camera set up. So lots of pluses there. Recently, I've been playing more with the recording capabilities and started recording our Bible classes, for instance. And so now I'm able to make a whole series of Bible class recordings, you know, and display those together. So if people aren't in our Bible classes, or 6 months from now, somebody wants to study the topic that we covered in Bible class, I can have a video series of that easily with our Ustream feed. And I also discovered that there are links to download those Bible class videos or whatever recordings you make in Flash format. So you could archive them on your own servers or upload them in another way so that people can get to them on your own website or whatever your desire is. So there's lots of functionality there. I have struggled at times with the interface. Sometimes I don't always find easily all the links to all the capabilities of the Ustream videos, but if you do a little digging and spend a little time on the site, I think you'll find that it's quite robust, and it has served our purpose as well to be able to be part of that streaming video world that has opened up to us, and to do all that with a free price tag. So that's my pick, Martin, Ustream.tv.
I'm just curious, how do you kind of have a sense for how many live viewers you have on any given Sunday?
Yeah, we are right around the 8 to 10 connections each week. And occasionally, you know, I'll have members that say, we watched this week and, you know, you could improve this, or it was great for meeting our needs or whatever. But I think we do have kind of a lurking group who watches pretty regularly, who we aren't real aware of. And one thing, one of my goals is to add some kind of a guest book or something so people can communicate with us that way. We have received on two different occasions correspondence, like actual mail in our mailbox through the postmaster. Huh? Yeah. Where people have written to us and told us how meaningful it was for them to be able to watch the service. Someone even sent us a contribution because of our our live video that was available to them. And it was both cases were, you know, friends of friends that got referred to our website, and they were ill or, you know, on hospice care and that kind of thing, and couldn't get out to church like they had their whole life faithfully attended, and they really appreciated that we had the services there for them.
Sure. Yep. And that's, you know, 8 to 10 may sound like a small number, but 8 to 10 is 8 to 10 souls that are being fed with God's word.
Well, and it's something potentially more, because that's just the number of connections. You don't know how many people are watching there.
Right. And it's also an encouragement to keep going, because if you stop, then it's very difficult to get, you know, get it going again, and just keep plugging away. It's not costing you anything, just a little bit of time, and sounds like it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think it's that regular, consistent broadcast that brings people to the site.
Right. Yep, absolutely. My pick of the week, and it's somewhat qualified as well, because it is not a perfect selection, but it's a fairly new concept. Many of us on the podcast are familiar with digital books, and we either have Nooks or Kindles or whatever. I have a Kindle at home, and I regularly look for digital versions of a book before I'll buy a paper copy. And many of the books on Amazon right now are available on Kindle. In fact, we talk with Northwestern Publishing House folks, Mark Buskey and Kurt Adams, the other day, and they talked about the People's Bible going on the Kindle and on Amazon. And my pick is basically the web version of the Reader, which is called Amazon Cloud Reader. It's basically a web interface that allows you to read books on your computer or other devices, too. It'll work on, I believe it works on the iPad and the Safari browser and a few other places as well. And it's very simple. It works on almost any platform. One of the reasons that Amazon did this is to kind of avoid the Apple tax, so to speak, where Apple was charging for in-app purchases for their iOS apps, and there was a Kindle app or an Amazon app. So what they've done is made this basic website or web viewer, which there's a buy link right there, so it kind of circumvents that. But I think they've done a nice job with it. You have access to all your books. All your bookmarks sync, and where you left off on if you were reading on an iPad or some other on your Kindle, and then you go to the web version, it'll pick up right where you left off, so you can sync that. It does do bookmarks. The one drawback, which is kind of a major one, I think they'll probably fix, is you can't annotate like you can on the Kindle. But this is really, I think, something they need to fix in order for it to really catch on for students and those kinds of people that want to annotate. In fact, I'm using it now to read through our Church of Facebook reading that we're doing, our review that we're doing every month now. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to be able to annotate right on the web, like you can, kind of like Digo, but there is no function like that at this point. So it's not quite as useful. And annotating on the Kindle and other devices is really a pain in the neck. So making it, because you got to use a little keyboard there, and it's kind of kludgy. But to do this on the web version would make a lot of sense, because you could type with a regular keyboard right on your web browser. So I expect them to correct that, and that would make sense that it have the same functionality that their standalone apps do. But totally free, and any book that you buy. So you really, on Amazon, if you look at that Kindle version, you don't really need a Kindle to read it. You just need this cloud reader, and you're good to go. So that is my pick of the week.
That's very cool. I learned something in the process. I have the Kindle app on my iPad. Mm-hmm. But what you're telling me is that if I bought a book through that app, I'm going to pay extra because I'm buying it on the iPad.
No, I'm not sure you're going to pay extra. And I'm not sure how they price this.
Okay.
I think Apple just takes a 30% cut, and Amazon eats it. That's why they were interested in kind of doing their own thing.
Circumventing.
So, yeah, so I don't think you're saving any money. But it is more convenient, I think, to be able to just go to any web browser and be able to read your stuff. So
absolutely.
And I do a lot of computer manuals this way, too. I've got a big old SharePoint manual that we use here that's all web-based or through the cloud reader as well as on the Kindle. So it works out well.
I had to smile. You said go to any web browser, but it says it's for Chrome and Safari.
That's
so they
true.
Aren't IE fans there at Amazon, apparently.
Right. I didn't try it on IE, actually. I use Chrome for the most part, but those are free. So
good stuff. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to community feedback.
All righty. We have a good amount to share. First up, we had a follow-up on our Wells Tech 200th podcast. We heard from Shanna White. We heard from her via our Facebook page. She left us a voicemail. Unfortunately, it was a little too late to get in on the 200th podcast, but she had some really exciting stuff to share with us related to the concept of a Wells forum. Martin, I don't know. Do you have that voicemail queued up at all?
I do not. Sorry
okay.
About
so
that.
We'll just kind of talk through her ideas, and that's just fine. What she was suggesting was it would be nice to have an online discussion forum, basically, for Wells members where they could go and connect online. And she even suggested that it might be neat for the seminary students to be moderators on that forum, and good experience for them as they're preparing to be full-time pastors or whatever. So she has a lot of enthusiasm for the idea. I think we passed the idea along to our communication services folks.
Yep, I did.
And hopefully, you know, maybe they'll be back in touch or take off with that idea.
In the meantime, there are obviously a couple avenues where discussions can happen. One is obviously the Wells Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can't start a discussion there, you can participate in those that are available, and there's devotional topics, there's Q&A questions, those kinds of things. So you can, through the comments section, you can carry on a dialogue there. Another area where you can start a discussion is on the In the Wells LinkedIn page, which is actually pretty well trafficked at this point. I get new requests all the time. I don't do a lot of moderating there. I think it ultimately self-moderates, but there's all kinds of discussions about different concepts there and job postings as well. So that's kind of a cool part of the LinkedIn tool there. So that's In the Wells. Just do a search on In the Wells and LinkedIn, and you have that option there too.
Yeah, so thanks, Shanna, for the correspondence. Mm-hmm, we appreciated hearing from you.
Absolutely, I think that's a great idea, sure.
We also heard from our friend Jason Schmidt out in Omaha, Nebraska, and Jason was busy this weekend tweeting some really cool iPad apps, especially with education in mind. And one that he shared with us was Land School, which has a light version, which is basically a teacher management software that you can install and view the different screens of your students in your classroom. Kind of a thumbnail look at what they're doing on their computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's lots more functionality there. With the free version, it's a little bit more limited. They do have a pay-for version as well, but you can't argue with that free price tag if you don't have anything at all in place.
Mm-hmm.
This may be a solution for managing classroom computers, especially as we move more to that one-to-one kind of scenarios in many of our schools, or hopefully in many of our schools over the coming years. The cool thing about Land School is there's also an iPad app, and we'll have a link in the show notes to this, and the iPad app is free as well. But from your iPad, then, you can control the students' computers and darken their screens if you want them to pay attention to you instead of the computer for a few minutes, or whatever it may be that your needs are. So check out Land School if that's a need that you have.
Yeah, this is I think this is cool because we're hearing more and more about one-to-one computing and you know, these mobile carts that schools are buying and netbooks and those kinds of things. This this is probably going to be a necessary thing. So good tip.
And here's a timely tip from Jason. There is an iPad app called Sky Safari. Actually, it's for iPhone and iPad. And it allows you to view the constellations and stars and things. It actually knows your location and shows you what the sky should look like from that point of view. Very robust and impressive application. And it is free, but only through September 21st, which is the day this podcast is coming out. So if you're listening on September 21st, you might want to hop on over to Sky Safari 3 in the App Store and download it for your iOS device.
Just one of the many reasons you want to tune into this podcast as soon as it comes out.
That's right, hot off the press. And then finally, Jason tweeted a link to me to a cool app called iMotion HD, which allows you to use your iPad and create stop motion videos. Mm-hmm. And this one's a free download as well, although it looked like once you create a video, you might have to pay to actually be able to download that video from their website, maybe a couple bucks. But
rather than what, just viewing online?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, but what fun to be able to create stop motion videos. I know a few years ago I had our kids in our school do puppet show videos, mm-hmm. and they had a lot of fun with this, but I'm sure they would get a kick out of doing stop motion stuff as well. So check it out if you're interested.
You do your own little Davy and Goliath.
There you go. Boy, you just dated yourself.
Yes. Onward.
Okay. Next, we heard from blogger Steve Brown. He runs the Worship Ideas You Can Use blog, and he's also a member at Messiah in South Windsor, Connecticut. Boy, just saying South Windsor, Connecticut, don't you think it's pretty and fall colors there mm-hmm. right now? Wouldn't you like to visit?
Yep.
Anyway, Steve is a musician, and he had a couple of links to share with our listeners that are very helpful to him. These are web pages for guitarists, and they define a bunch of guitar chords and show different finger patterns and neck positions to use those. So check out the links in the show notes. There's two different pages that he sent us links for.
Very nice. Thanks, Steve.
We got an email update from Pastor Phil Huebner. Longtime listeners may remember Phil has joined us on the podcast before. He is the pastor at Christ the King in Palm Coast, Florida. He's also a classmate of my husband's. They graduated together from the sem in 2007, and his assignment straight out of seminary was to start a brand new congregation down there in Palm Coast, Florida. And their congregation has grown. They've been through a building process, and they have a thriving school. And mm-hmm. so it's been fun to watch the progress. He wrote to say that they are up to fifth grade now. They have about 200 students and 17 full-time teachers.
Wow.
And that includes all of their daycare offerings and preschool offerings as well. Mm-hmm. So very exciting growth there, and exciting to hear about the technology they're making use of there in Palm Coast. They have two iPads that they use for school, and then two that they use for their daycare. And for the daycare, they found a childcare application that tracks food, diapers, nap time, and lots of other things in relation to caring for the children. And at the end of the day, they just click a send an email button, and it sends the parents all this information
Neat.
About what happened with their children in daycare
Awesome.
That day. So we'll have to get the name of that. I don't know if he put it in the email, but we'll have to
That's
find out
iPad
what app,
app
that was.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
He says the older children use a mobile iTeach cart with a widescreen smart board and projector mounted on it. So it can roll right into their classrooms and be able to share the smart board that way. And then finally, he mentioned that they're making use of Jupyter Grades. We've talked about this on the podcast in the past. It used to be called Snap Grades, but they went through a name change this summer. And it's a great tool for managing grades online, attendance, assignments, and communication. It has it all wrapped in one. Costs $50 per teacher that's making use of it. So I think that's a really reasonable cost to have all that online capability with mm-hmm. your school management. So in the future, they're looking to do digital camera stuff and video camera stuff. So we'll be anxious to hear about those projects and how they're developing in your classroom, Pastor Huebner. Thanks very much for sharing all that update with us.
Very good.
Yeah, good stuff. And then finally, one link that I shared on our DIGO group online was to a recent blog post from the Lutherans in Mexico blog. This is a blog written by missionary wife Rachel Hartman. And she started a new series recently about the Tales from Their Convention, where she's looking at different congregations that are part of their national church in Mexico and different things that they're doing. And I really had to share this one with the Wells Tech audience because she focused on a church, La Santa Cruz, the Holy Cross Church, where they're actively using Twitter down in Mexico. The congregation sends out messages regarding upcoming events, changes in the Facebook page, greetings, and Bible passages, all using their Twitter account. And she mentioned two different ways that the Twitter communication has paid off. They sent out Ash Wednesday service invitations, and 10 new visitors attended because of the Twitter interaction and seeing the invitation on Twitter. And then another tool involves prayers. They send out tweets regularly asking for prayer requests, and people can private message those in through Twitter. So really exciting to see them making use of this new communication technology.
Very nice, yeah. And yeah. Thanks again to Rachel for sharing all this. This is great.
Yeah. I think that'll do it for community feedback this week.
Yep, I was going to mention, Sally, we got word back from Jason Petoskey this week that he got his camera and actually sent us a couple sample videos. Did you see those?
I did. That was really cool. I forgot to add it.
I was very impressed with the quality, you know, that little camera produces. You know, very sharp video, and he did kind of a video tour of their facility there, and very cool. I'm glad he can take advantage of that. So
Jason was our winner from our 200th episode contest, and he has not just a flip video camera, but the coolest Wells Tech flip video camera you could ever imagine.
That's
so
right.
Make good use of it, Jason. We're happy to see it.
All right. Next week, we are excited to begin again our series on classroom technology, and this is a once-a-month occurrence during the school year. And Gail Potratz from New London will be joining us once again. And we hope also to have an interview with another teacher. We mentioned one-to-one computing in the show today, Kurt Gosdak from St. Lucas in Kewaskum. He and his third and fourth graders sent us an entry for the 200th episode. Very cute. Although they didn't win, we wanted to get Kurt on the show to talk about their one-to-one computing initiative there for their third and fourth grade classroom to see how he did it and what their experiences are so far.
Yeah, I'm really anxious for that. I think there's a lot of people in our listening audience that might be interested in one-to-one computing options in their schools. And hopefully we can learn along with Kurt, and this is a good time of year to start working toward that even for next school year.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's close the show, Sally, with the music from Cross to Glory, their album Life Song, their song, I Have Every Reason. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
I've every reason to praise your name, and I feel shame. I'm loved by God each and every day. Lord, you make things new, revealing you and your love for me. Knowing you're beside me, Lord, I have all things, with your strength beneath me, soar on eagle's wings. Seeing you're before me, you make true my dreams. Your love has filled my voice and makes me wanna sing. I've every reason to praise your name, but now I feel shame. I'm loved by God each and every day. Lord, you make things new, revealing you and your love for me. Knowing God is for me, I cannot fall. He did not spare his son, but gave him for us all. His blessings do not end, but they will overflow. God's working for my have every reason to praise your name. Now I feel shame, I'm loved by God. Each and every day, Lord, you make things new, revealing you and your love for me. Nothing can remove me from the love of God. Not the powers below, nor any power above. I am convinced that I shall more than conquer be, 'cause Jesus is my Savior and lives eternity. I have every reason to praise your name. Now I feel shame, I'm loved by God. Each and every day, Lord, you make things new, revealing you and your love for me. I've every reason to praise your name. Now I feel shame, I'm loved by God. Each and every day,